Streaming sponsored by the Madison Concourse Hotel.
Celebrate New Year's Eve at the Madison Concourse Hotel and Governor's Club. Enjoy live jazz, a surf and turf dinner, comedians, disco with BO5, classic country, a DJ dance party, and a ballroom brunch to start 2025 off right. Details at concoursehotel.com.
130,000 people. The BBC's Jonathan Head is in Thailand, one of 14 countries where remembrances are underway.
Every community is doing it in their own way. There's not a lot to analyze, apart from the lessons learned in terms of being prepared. It was simply something absolutely massive that traumatized communities, but from which most of them have made remarkable recoveries.
Israel has launched more deadly airstrikes in Gaza. Reporter Linda Gradstein has the latest.
In the first incident, Palestinians say at least five journalists were killed when an Israeli airstrike struck their van near the Al Auda hospital in central Gaza. They said the vehicle was clearly marked as a media van. The Israeli army said it was a targeted attack against Islamic Jihad gunmen. In a separate incident, at least five people were killed in an Israeli airstrike on a house in Gaza City.
That death toll could rise. Many people are still trapped in the rubble. Six people are recovering after they were hit by a taxi that jumped a curb near Macy's in Manhattan. CBS New York's Alicia Reed reports one of the victims was a 9-year-old boy.
We spoke to a witness who helped remove the young boy and a woman they believe to be his mother, both tourists from Australia, from underneath the taxi. He says they had to rock the SUV back and forth to get the woman from underneath, and his wife was also one of the people injured.
My wife got hit kind of up on her back shoulder.
That Good Samaritan says the little boy told him this was the worst holiday ever.
Police believe the driver suffered a medical emergency. A batch of cat food is being recalled after a cat died of bird flu.
Testing done by feds and the Oregon Veterinary Diagnostic Laboratory confirmed an indoor cat in Oregon's Washington County contracted bird flu and died after eating Northwest Natural's pet food. The company has issued a recall of 2-pound bags of feline turkey recipe, raw frozen pet food marked with best if used by dates of 5/21/26B10 and 6/23/2026B1. The product was sold in a dozen states and Canada. Jennifer Kuiper, CBS News.
CBS's Courtney Keeley reports Mega Millions tickets are selling like hotcakes after no one won the billion-dollar prize on Christmas Eve.
The estimated jackpot for Friday's drawing is about $1.15 billion, potentially the fifth largest jackpot in the game's history. The odds of winning the Mega Millions jackpot are about 1 in 302 million.
The biggest lottery prize ever was a $2 billion Powerball jackpot in 2022. S&P futures down 24. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
It's basketball tonight. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. It's the Bucks and the Brooklyn Nets tonight at Fiserv Forum. Chris Middleton making progress, scoring 21 points in their win over the Bulls as he comes back from ankle surgery. Doc Rivers.
It's just going to take them time. These minutes have been fantastic for them. To keep them under 25 in the last two games when we have Dame and Giannis out and still keep Chris under 25, that's huge for us.
NFL, the Packers getting ready to play the Vikings Sunday in Minnesota. Wide receiver Christian Watson talked about that bruised knee injury he suffered Monday night on a 14-yard end run against the Saints.
It was just an awkward fall. I went to the ground, and then the DB just kind of fell into my legs and just kind of felt something with the knee. I mean, it definitely hurt right away, but I mean, it felt like it was good enough to go back in, so I went back in, and it was feeling all right. But I mean, it just kind of was just lingering a little bit, and I just couldn't play the type of football I wanted to play, so just had to shut it down.
That's the Packers' Christian Watson. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. If you're looking for things to do between Christmas and New Year's, there is lots to see in the theaters at the moment. If you're looking for a well-reviewed musical biopic where the lead character is a monkey, the film Better Man might be for you. It tells the story of the meteoric rise of British pop sensation and former boy band member Rob Williams and his fall from grace. If you're wondering why they made him a monkey in the film, it's because Williams says he always felt less evolved and because when he's on stage, he sometimes feels like a monkey. One of the weirdest trailers I've ever seen, but it is getting good reviews. Other films that open on Christmas Day include The Fire Inside, about a female boxer from Flint, Michigan, who becomes the first woman to win gold in the sport at the Olympics. Great reviews. The Bob Dylan biopic, A Complete Unknown, starring Timothy Chalamet, is currently in theaters and is also incredibly well-reviewed and is getting Oscar buzz. Let's go to the movies. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Peach Waba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
It is going to be foggy and drizzly again today, but it is going to be warmer. Our high right around 42 this afternoon. Tonight, 39 with light rain. Tomorrow, cloudy with scattered light rain and even warmer with a high near 45. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it's 32.
Real news, great conversation from Milwaukee and beyond. 540 WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. From our Lake Wasota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
And good morning. Welcome to another special edition of Up North News Radio, here for the end of the year, looking back at 2024. And we have a special emphasis this morning on our weekly climate check features. And this is one of the parts of the show I'm most proud of, that every Wednesday at 6:30, Melissa Baldoff has joined me, and we've discussed various subjects dealing with the changing climate from a couple of different standpoints, you know, both how bad things are, how much better things could be, and the leaders and the obstructionists and the economic benefits to all of it. So we're going to cover several of these interviews that were done with Melissa Baldoff over the past year. Melissa, thanks for joining me for this. It's good to see you.
Of course. Yeah. Happy to join you and talk about some of the stuff we talked about.
We are going to talk about the stuff we talked about, because there were a lot of good things that we had. I'm just going to give folks a preview. These are some of the areas that we covered over the years, over the year, I should say. We talked about the air quality in Beloit and folks showing leadership in doing community air monitoring there. That also led to a discussion with Dr. Joel Charles about new EPA rules on soot. We talked about the controversy over a natural gas plant in Superior. We've gone over Wisconsin's slow but continuing progress in its whole renewable portfolio. You know, just how much renewable energy we're putting out there on the grid compared to other states. There's been no shortage of talk about home projects that can be done and the help that you can get to make your home more energy efficient. We've talked from a political standpoint about Project 2025, the things that a Trump administration could do, Donald Trump's flip-flops on electric vehicles, Donald Trump's misinformation about electric vehicles, all of the public-private investment that's out there through the Inflation Reduction Act so that school districts, you know, can save money on their utility bills, and that helps taxpayers. We talked about new reports on job growth in the green energy sectors, including discussions with superintendents and union workers about the work that's already being done in Wisconsin because of the way that folks are already embracing the moves toward a more energy efficient economy. And Melissa, if you were going to do a climate check, despite the concerns about what's coming next year, you know, in Washington, D.C., you still have to say that from a climate standpoint, there have been some really nice bits of progress being made by folks across the state over the past year, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. And hearing you recap all of that, it really does stand out to me how much folks on the ground in Wisconsin have been leading here. Thinking about, you know, what scientists and citizen activists were able to do in Beloit to make that project happen. and thinking about, you know, the activism of local school board members and local leaders in their communities who are advocating for projects to, you know, install solar panels, which will help them save money, help them take advantage of resources that will, you know, implement more energy efficiency measures, thinking about our unions who are implementing more apprenticeship programs. Like, these are really more, a lot of these activities are really more driven at a local level. So that really stands out to me, that Wisconsin is, we are committed to the fight. We are committed to climate action, no matter what is happening in Washington, D.C., or what isn't happening in Washington, D.C. And thinking about all of that really does make me hopeful for the future. And it's encouraging and it's energizing to me to think about everything that's happened in Wisconsin and know that all of those folks are going to remain just as active and just as committed to what's coming in the months and years ahead.
And so to get things started, while there are a lot of folks that are just, you know, fairly recently coming to embrace a greener economy, some folks have been at this for a while. So let's start by hearing from the superintendent up in the Northland Pines School District, Scott Foster. We talked to him in late November about their latest solar project. But get this, the Northland Pines School District, they've been embracing solar in some way, shape, or form for 20 years.
Yes. You know, we know that there are so many things, really exciting things happening in communities around Wisconsin. And oftentimes really exciting things happening in our schools have been kind of pioneering some of what's possible when it comes to renewable energies, when it comes to helping to save money by thinking about what's possible when it comes to, you know, installing solar panels, or, you know, thinking about how to be more energy efficient, and then thinking about how to incorporate that into a curriculum. So I'm really excited to learn a little bit more about what's happening in one of the school districts here in Wisconsin, and to welcome our guest today, Scott Foster with the Northland Pines School District.
Hey, Scott, how are you? Thank you for being here.
Great. Thank you for having me.
Now, you said you've been with the district about 25 years, but not all of them as district administrator.
No, this is my seventh year as district administrator.
Okay. But obviously, if we go way back, and some of your material talks about this, that the school district there up north has been embracing solar for 20 some years now, and that this dates back to 2004, planning for a new high school that would have renewable energy. So, I mean, we know that this has been part of the conversation for a very long time. Can you talk about just the mindset up there going that far back that has always been embracing of renewable energy, and you know, why you chose to pursue that route?
Sure. We had the fortunate or unfortunate need to build a new high school, and our community supported that financially and by passing a referendum, and that created an opportunity. So I think our partners at Huffman Corporation and our local community said, what could we think about outside the box? And also, what's planned for the long term? We came from a high school that did not last very long, only 35 years. So pretty sad for a building to last that long. So we need to do better. And it wasn't just nice classrooms. It was, how do we impact our own environment and our own culture for a very long time? So when that building opened, we looked at wind energy, solar, geothermal, all the ways that we could impact long-term budgets, but also make our footprint as small as possible. We were ultimately recognized for the building of the school as one of the first, and maybe even the first, high school that was called LEED Gold Certified, which means you met a lot of very high-end standards of creating a building that would be energy efficient. So maybe when the door opened, we didn't have solar immediately and we didn't have wind. We're right next to an airport, so wind got taken out very quickly. But we prepared a building that was energy efficient, built to make sure heating and cooling costs would be kept down. So I think sometimes that gets forgotten about. But also knowing that solar would be in our future, and making sure we had the plans so that it could be added when the time was right. And that's where the journey went to adding solar.
So you've got that at Northland Pines High School, the middle school. There was work done at Eagle River Elementary School, Land O'Lakes Elementary School, St. Germain Elementary School. So this is not just some kind of feel-good demonstration project. This has been a full-on commitment.
This has been a commitment for this and the use of energy, being really engaged as school board. We have a great leader of our buildings and ground and Dave Bonin, community people that saw the long-term value. Probably what else is unique in our story, and I think it goes for other schools and businesses and other groups, is we have three different campuses within our district. We have 477 square miles. So we have 1,350 students, but we cover a lot of territory. And ironically, we have three different energy companies, and we have solar on all three campuses and done in three different ways. And I think that's been a unique thing when people call to talk about solar. They want to know our model. Well, we've had to do a model that works for best in each location and with each power company, and how things have changed. You mentioned, you know, the change with giving schools and public people, the public entities, the opportunity for tax credits. That did not exist when the high school was done. So our situation in Eagle River, we had a partner with local or with some business owners or financial backing to get our solar here so those tax credits could go to them and then work us into the solar plan. In Land O'Lakes, that power company is not interested in third-party partnerships and refused to let us do that. So we couldn't use the same model, and we had to switch to a model where we lease them the land and they put the solar on site and committed. It took years. Our board was very determined. And finally in St. Germain, the world has changed, and these opportunities for us to own our own system and also to put in batteries. So we've always discussed batteries on the Eagle River campus, but we didn't want that commitment until we knew it worked. So St. Germain, our newest installation, does have batteries and some new technology that will allow us to make better decisions of where we go with Eagle River campus on either adding or adding batteries at some point.
You may have, now that it's been all these years that you've been involved, you may have graduates already who have become homeowners and are more amenable to, you know, having solar at their homes, or maybe there have been graduates who've moved on to taking, you know, courses that would lead them to be electricians or installers or anything like that. It just feels like you've opened up new worlds for your graduates.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's just such an amazing career opportunity. I think of one of our students that attended Soar Middle School, which is a project-based middle school, and then attended Northland Pines High School. So the mindset of thinking and project-based learning and mindset of environment, which Soar Middle School has a strong background in, he has gone on to electrical engineering, and really one of the focus areas he believes is these alternative energy sources and possibly solar directly. And as we have found through these projects, especially the early ones, the need for high quality installers and people to work in industry is a great demand, because it's hard, just like anything, you got to have quality people supporting it and installing and problems, troubleshooting. So I do think he's just one example. I think others are on the pathway as well. And I think that's going to be a real positive for, hopefully we can be part of the solution for future workers in this important industry in Wisconsin.
And that was Scott Foster, the superintendent in Northland Pines, and he was certainly right about that. Hey, we are just getting started on this special holiday edition of Up North News Radio with some of our climate check interviews from throughout the course of the year. We'll continue that coverage next here on Up North News Radio from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Your new choice. Real news. Great conversation. 540 WAUK.
You have three ex-wives and your current trophy wife wants a life insurance policy three times the size of the policies you had to purchase for your previous mistakes? If so, you need to call Big Lou at Term Provider, 800-230-2777. Big Lou is intimately familiar with your problems, and if you're 50 or 60 years old and in reasonably good health, a $1 million policy should only cost about $100 to $200 per month. Big Lou may have a solution for your previous policies as well. You may even save enough money to lighten the load on your new $1 million policy. Remember, call Big Lou. He's like you, except he's only on number two. Call Term Provider at 800-230-2777. That's 800-230-2777. For $1 million in term life insurance that you can live with, call Big Lou at 800-230-2777. 800-230-2777.
Hey there, it's Carrie Joy with your Work Money Minute. On my YouTube channel, I recently talked to Amanda Clayman, a financial therapist and an all-around excellent person. We talked about how to reduce money anxiety, and her advice was really helpful. She said, unless we have a time to do money, we don't have a time to not do money. Meaning, if we set aside some time to think about and manage our money, it lets our brain stop worrying about money all the time. For example, I have a monthly money meeting with myself, which lowers my money anxiety and helps keep me on top of my finances. If you don't already, set and keep that money meeting with yourself. It'll help your wallet and your peace of mind. Remember what Amanda said, unless you have a time to do money, you don't have a time to not do money. For more everyday money tips, check out workmoney.org. Till next time, this is Carrie Joy saying take good care.
You're listening to Milwaukee's Real News and Great Conversation, 540 WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
We're spending some time this morning on one of our weekly segments here on Up North News Radio. Every Wednesday at 6:30, I'm joined by Melissa Baldoff, political strategist, formerly of Governor Tony Evers' office, and we discuss climate change from a Wisconsin perspective. Two of our past guests make up this segment. We'll hear from former Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes in a bit about the work he's doing to connect folks with resources to do energy retrofits. But first, clearing the air in Beloit. It's an industrial center, no surprise there, but what was surprising was the lack of active monitoring of particulate matter in the air, the kind of pollution that's especially harmful to the very young, very sick, very old. So Healthy Climate Wisconsin sought to change that, and we spoke in February with former Beloit City Council member Brittany Keyes.
What started the Citizen Science Project, it was really two big things. And the first was, we're historically a industrial community, and the industries that pollute have to report emissions to the EPA. And so looking at the reported emissions by the industries, we're able to see what is happening in Rock County. And it was the trends from 2010 to the present. So specifically starting in 2017, 2019 to the last accessible data, 2022, Rock County has seen a skyrocket kind of trend upward in the reported greenhouse gas emissions to the EPA. And with that, we do know that that's often an underreporting. And with the reported emissions, we looked at our public health data, and we have amongst the highest childhood asthma rates and hospitalizations in the state.
So you did work to get these monitors, because what had been, I thought it was just one monitor once upon a time.
And the location likely is not ideal for capturing local pollution. So what we were able to do is, per the DNR recommendation, is seek out an EPA loan program. And we were able to get six monitors up throughout Beloit, partnering with local schools, service providers. We were able to appreciate what the particulate matter air pollution was and the trends across the city.
People are going to say, well, wait, is the only solution to this that you know, you have to close some places down, and that's going to cost jobs, and that's just going to exacerbate, you know, income inequities and make things worse for people who'd been working in these plants? Or are there ways that they can, you know, mitigate and take corrective action?
So the exciting part is that there the technology is there to offer for clean energy solutions and to help industry clean up the pollution. So what I hope for is a large collaborative partnership between the private and public sector to really work together, because I think it benefits all of us. And when you say this is an economic issue, I agree, because looking at recruiting and retaining families to the area and to work for these terrific companies, right? This is a big deal. Families want to come to places that have clean and safe air. So this is an economic issue that I believe would benefit industry to partner with, and then really continue to set the roadmap of how communities respond when you get this news after you start monitoring.
And so I'm sure we will check in with the Beloit community in 2025 and see what kind of progress they're making. Earlier in the year, we visited with former Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes. He chaired the governor's climate change task force during Governor Evers' first term, and now has a group, Forward Together Wisconsin, that helps connect people and school districts and businesses to resources that are provided through the Inflation Reduction Act.
Yeah, very unique group. And, you know, add this to the list of the things I've been up to, but this is one that is particularly important, as they all are, given the fact that I was able to chair the governor's task force on climate change. Now, the frustrating part about it is so many of the recommendations of that task force were left up to legislative approval. And at this point, we don't have a legislature that seems keen on approving any sort of climate recommendations. But the work is too important for us to just forget about. And one of the things I want to do post-elected life is to be sure that Wisconsin still met our clean energy goals, the clean energy goals that we set while I was in office, having a clean power plan for the very first time. It's going to take some outside help to make that happen. So I started Forward Together Wisconsin as an organization to assist with the implementation of the Inflation Reduction Act. We've taken a multi-pronged approach to this. One, we've been knocking on doors, talking to folks right at their doorstep about the incentives that they qualify for, things they may not have realized or even thought about, ways to improve efficiency in their own homes and how to save money to actually do that. And you run into so many folks who, one, don't know what the Inflation Reduction Act is, two, have zero idea about how it impacts them, and we're trying to close that access gap. And another thing we're doing is a partnership with the with Green Homeowners United. It is our Green Homes Initiative, because you know, many of the incentives for the Inflation Reduction Act are on the back end. It takes a lot of upfront investment to make some of the upgrades. And we've been able to help cover the upfront costs for energy assessments and insulation work for a number of homes. And then finally, we're getting ready to kick off our Green Schools Initiative, helping out schools and school districts, connecting them to the resources they may not have been aware of, especially the lower income school districts that may not, or smaller school districts for that matter, that may not have the business officers with the capacity to be able to apply for some of these grants or research funding opportunities. So to put it very plainly, Forward Together Wisconsin operates to make sustainable attainable for folks.
You know, when I hear you describing that, and we heard Jen Gietrich a couple of weeks back from Conservation Voters, and we've talked to people from other groups as well, here's what I'm reminded of. During the Obama administration, coming out of the Great Recession was the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, and all that search for, you know, shovel-ready projects, which, you know, met with some success. In other places, the shovel-ready part of it wasn't necessarily there, and it seems that since then, what the Biden administration has figured out is that it's not enough to just say, here we go, here's an investment. You actually have to, like you said, knock on the doors, do the radio interviews, talk to folks, real end users, about what's out there for them. And that's part of, it sounds like you're one part of that communication effort to, you know, everyday Americans.
Well, of course, people here in Wisconsin have a whole lot to gain from the Inflation Reduction Act. This is a once in a lifetime opportunity. You know, when the task force was created, we assumed that there was going to be no help from the federal government, given the president we had, and given the prior reluctance to make these large scale investments. But now we have this abundance of support and resources. However, we have to make sure that these resources are marshaled effectively and equitably.
Thank you so much for telling us more about Forward Together Wisconsin and all of these new opportunities.
Hey, thank you so much.
Thank you.
We will be back with more after this. You're up north.
A new choice. Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. 540 WAUK.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun.
It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Agricultural groups, including the American Farm Bureau Federation, have tagged labor as the number one issue facing farmers in the new year. I'm Stephanie Hoff for the Midwest Farm Report, along with you on a Thursday morning. As agriculture relies heavily on guest workers, how does the Trump administration's plan for deportation going to play out for farmers? Wisconsin Farm Bureau's Director of National Affairs, Tyler Wensloff, explains that the U.S. can have the best of both worlds when it comes to both a secure border and a guest worker program that works for the farm economy.
For sure, and it's something that's is going to be a very difficult conversation, but I think the border crisis has highlighted how important it is, and it's not that we can't have a secure border, but also have ag labor, and so those issues are not connected in any way. And I think making sure that we have a secure border but also having the workforce that we rely is important, and I think it's something that we can get done.
Tyler Wensloff is the Director of National Affairs with the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation. Stick around for a look at your market update coming your way next.
With over 60 years of experience in the auction business, Steffes Group is the trusted source for buying high-quality equipment. From farm and construction equipment to transportation and land, Steffes Group auctions feature a diverse selection of assets for whatever your needs may be. Bid with confidence, knowing that Steffes Group's team of professionals prioritize honesty, integrity, and outstanding service. Visit steffesgroup.com to view their upcoming auctions and start bidding on the equipment you need today.
The only competition that really matters is you versus you. And with the performance of Veltima fungicide from BASF, you can take your best results even further. Veltima fungicide is on your side to out-yield the competition by an average of 7 bushels per acre, but you've never been average. Beat your own record, get every bushel you deserve, and make this your best season yet with Veltima fungicide from BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
Agricultural markets will be closed until 8:30 this morning after the Christmas holiday. But here's where they closed on Tuesday, Christmas Eve. Cash corn was up 0.75 cents at 448.5. 2025 new crop corn was unchanged at 437.25. Cash soybeans were up 0.25 cents at 975.25. And 2025 new crop soybeans were up 7 cents, closing at 994 a bushel. Cash wheat is down 0.75 cents at 534.75, and July new crop wheat is also down 5.75 cents at 552.5. Class 3 milk contracts saw support, with January milk up 12 cents at 1982 a hundredweight, and the February contract up 27 cents at 1988. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Stephanie Hoff. Merry Christmas.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
It is going to be foggy and drizzly again today, but it is going to be warmer. Our high right around 42 this afternoon. Tonight, 39 with light rain. Tomorrow, cloudy with scattered light rain, and even warmer with a high near 45. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it's 32.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Cindy from Appleton.
Time Magazine has made the convicted felon the man of the year this year. Shame on them.
Time Magazine base their person of the year on impact and, like, newsmaking. The CEO assassination is pretty much the only news cycle that isn't entirely focused on Donald Trump, and yet it still relates to him because he has no health care policy.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. The Todd Alba Show.
UW Systems spends $51 million of our taxpayer money for consultants. 3 times the budget shortfall that triggered the Oshkosh layoffs in 2023. Why is there such silence from Democrats in the state capitol on this? Ask people in Richland Center, Waukesha, Washington County, if they got their $51 million worth for the UW system.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2, on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's electric!
Welcome back to one of our year-end editions of Up North News Radio with a focus on climate check. Here's a great little segment, an interview that we did back in February with some good news about the air we breathe. Melissa Baldoff is with us, along with a guest, Dr. Joel Charles. We've visited before with him, president of Healthy Climate Wisconsin. And boy, you talk about wanting a good news headline. We so often have news that is dire, headlines that look ominous. Listen to this headline from the Washington Post. New air pollution rule could prevent thousands of premature deaths. That's a big deal. Melissa Baldoff, good morning.
Good morning. This is, like you said, so seldom I feel we have the opportunity to talk about good news. And this is not only good news, but it's good news that is, you know, due in at least some part to advocacy from people in communities all over the country and from folks like Dr. Charles and his colleagues with Healthy Climate Wisconsin, who have been advocating for these higher standards from the EPA. We had a guest on several months ago from Healthy Climate Wisconsin. We had Pam Guthman on to talk about the proposed new standards, advocating for these stronger standards. And now, you know, a week ago, we get the news that the EPA was enacting the stronger standards. So it's great news because the news is great. And it's also great news that, you know, we're seeing advocacy work.
That's right. And here's the exact news copy from the Washington Post. The Environmental Protection Agency is strengthening limits on fine particulate matter, one of the nation's most widespread deadly air pollutants, prompting praise from public health experts and backlash from business groups. The stricter standards could prevent thousands of premature deaths, particularly in communities of color where people have breathed unhealthy air for decades. While business groups don't dispute these enormous health benefits, they argue that the standards could cause major economic upheaval by erasing manufacturing jobs across the country. So with that intro, let's bring in Dr. Joel Charles, the president of Healthy Climate Wisconsin. Dr. Charles, nice to visit with you again.
Yeah, good to speak with you again. Thanks for having me, Pat, and nice to meet you, Melissa. Yeah, we're really pleased that the EPA passed these new standards. You know, the American people came together back in the 70s to pass the Clean Air Act because we have stated it as a value that everyone has a right to clean air and to breathe easy. And so, you know, Congress set the standard 50 years ago that the EPA should study essentially every 5 years, what is the impact of different pollutants on health and what technology do we have available to protect people from those impacts. And the more we learn about air pollutants, in particular soot, the more we learn there's really no safe level of them. Soot in particular, you know, these fine particulates, they're so small that they go into the lungs, cross into the bloodstream, and can really get anywhere in the body, even into the brain, and cross into the placenta. So we know that these soot particles are fine particulates, which are mainly coming from burning of fossil fuels. They are responsible for preterm births, stillbirths, delayed cognitive development in children, asthma, heart attacks, cancer, dementia. Really, from the moment of conception to our patient's last breath, folks in Wisconsin are made sick by these particulates. And so we're really glad the EPA has strengthened the protections on these.
Yeah, these are tiny particles, about 30 times smaller than a human hair. They're called PM2.5, shorthand for particulate matter smaller than 2.5 micrometers in diameter, commonly referred to as soot. There's currently an allowable limit for annual levels, so over the course of a year from, now again, this is all very, you know, technical, but just to give you an idea of this change in the standard, from 12 micrograms per cubic meter to 9, that is a significant reduction, which is why we're getting into, you know, pushback from business that we'll get into in just a moment here. But Dr. Charles, again, it's been, you know, very clear that soot pollution like this is one of the most dangerous forms of air pollution. And if we've learned nothing else from the coronavirus pandemic, it is not to underestimate the power of the very smallest bits of material from doing the most damage.
Yeah, absolutely. And really, the more we learn about air pollutants, in particular soot or fine particulates, as I said, the more we learn that they're damaging, you know. So we kind of have this steady ratcheting up where we learn, we get better at science, we learn more about how damaging these are, and at the same time, industry develops better technologies to avoid them. And there's a mandate in the Clean Air Act. That's why we update these rules every so often. The last update, frankly, was overdue. It's supposed to happen every 5 years. The last update was during the Obama administration. And so this opportunity came around, and health professionals know that this is a huge deal to protect Wisconsinites' health. So our group, Healthy Climate Wisconsin, alongside the Wisconsin Medical Society and a lot of other physician groups and other health professional groups in Wisconsin, really stepped up and pushed the Environmental Protection Agency to adopt as strong as possible of standards. Frankly, because there's no safe level of these soot, we really wanted to see lower levels, but we're happy with the progress that we've made.
That's fantastic. And, you know, I'm seeing too in, you know, some information that Healthy Climate Wisconsin has released, you know, this really some stark details about what this kind of pollution has meant in Wisconsin. You know, 460,000 adults and 75,000 kids in Wisconsin suffer from asthma. So those are people who are really impacted by this kind of air pollution. But are there other folks that are, you know, more at risk? You know, seeing those numbers on asthma is really stark, but are there other folks who are at higher risk?
Yeah, there are. First, I'll say everyone is impacted by this. There's not a person in Wisconsin who is not impacted by particulates. Everyone's health is worsened at least a little bit by this. But yes, there are people who are more vulnerable. Obviously, you know, I mentioned impacts during pregnancy. That's a big concern for us. Young kids who are more vulnerable to asthma, certainly this is responsible for a lot of the asthma cases we see. Anyone with lung or heart disease is really vulnerable to this. When we see particulate levels go up, we see more people coming into the emergency room with heart attacks and strokes. So I take care of a lot of these people in clinic in my rural community, and I also admit them to the hospital. And so I certainly see the health impacts of burning fossil fuels and of soot in particular. So, you know, it's very meaningful to me to see my patients protected, because I take care of a lot of these people and I really care about them. And it is sort of not just people. So the other group of people who are more vulnerable are essentially people who have less power. So people of color and low income folks. That's because, you know, we've passed policies over decades that sort of force those people into areas that are more polluted. And so, you know, it's a big win for fairness, frankly, these tightened standards, because it's going to protect people who are already overburdened and vulnerable.
Now, these rules don't go into effect overnight. States will have several years to reach some of these new limits, but still, the EPA estimates that these new tighter standards will prevent 4,500 premature deaths a year by 2032, prevent about 800,000 asthma-related emergency visits, and the lower pollution exposure could reduce healthcare costs by $46 billion by that time. $46 billion saved in healthcare costs, Melissa. So as much as something like this should be, you know, very much more emphasized on the public health and safety standpoint, you can't leave out the economic and the political considerations. And so, yes, there's going to be business pushback, but, you know, these estimates, you know, especially reducing healthcare costs, that certainly has to carry some weight as well when you look at, you know, what are the policy implications of this?
Let's say you would certainly hope so, that we're going to see, you know, fewer sick days, fewer people, you know, who are unable to, you know, come into work because they have a sick kid, you know, people who aren't needing to spend as much on their healthcare. So you would hope that businesses would be able to get behind something like this.
Yeah. So what I would add is that, you know, as a student of the Clean Air Act over the last 50 years, what we've seen is that the benefits are almost always larger than anticipated, and the cost of implementing the policies is almost always lower than expected. So this is a pattern we've seen time and time again. A new rule is proposed. Industry says the sky is going to fall. Then essentially industry implements that solution much more quickly than they expected, at much lower cost than expected, because humans are really good at innovating. And also, the EPA has a mandate to consider the best technologies that are already available when implementing these rules. At the same time, because these pollutants are more damaging really than we know, we find that there's more benefits than anticipated. So one study, the Clean Air Act, showed that for every dollar spent on decreasing air pollution, there was $30 in economic benefits and avoided costs, which is economically one of the most successful policies in American history. So we have no reason to think that the same thing isn't going to happen here. So, you know, certainly it's important to consider economic impacts of policies, but the precedent here is very clearly that it's essentially always worth moving towards cleaner air. And the reality is that we have such good technology now. You know, the price of renewables and other clean technologies have dropped by 90%+ in the last 10 years. They're now really the cheapest source of energy in human history. So we have the technology to make it so everybody can breathe easy, and so we can have strong industry and manufacturing in Wisconsin and the U.S. So it's really a no-brainer to move in that direction.
Yeah, I mean, this is just, it's just a stunning level of personal impact. And a coverage of this from National Public Radio notes that multiple analyses have found that there have been at best negligible impacts of air pollution restrictions on local economic growth. So like you said, the economy is resilient. People are creative, and they work to make things better. And there's definitely room for improvement here, because again, these are annual standards of exposure. The daily allowable standard was not, so that leaves room for fluctuations in, you know, what we're going to see out there for pollution. So definitely room to grow in that area. But then, Dr. Charles, in wrapping things up, you know, what are the other things that you're looking at where you could see some kind of a policy victory like this, whether it's at the federal or the state or some other level?
Well, you know, obviously anybody, you know, who thinks about climate change or air pollution who's been in Wisconsin has been waiting for the opportunity to pass comprehensive climate legislation. And the state of Wisconsin, frankly, has been delinquent in that for the last 14 years, I would say. And so it's really time for Wisconsin to do what its neighbors have done. You know, Minnesota, Michigan, Illinois, all these states have passed really great comprehensive climate legislation. But even short of that, the state legislature right now, the state Senate passed a bipartisan bill to at least improve our EV charging infrastructure and make use of these huge windfalls of federal money coming. Right now, we're waiting to see if the Assembly is going to pass that bill. It passed the Senate like 32-1. So no reason the Assembly shouldn't pass that. But, you know, we all know how that goes. The last thing I would say is that, you know, the EPA hasn't just been considering these suit rules. There's a whole suite of really critical rules, some really important ones around mercury, but then also three rules around carbon emissions or greenhouse gas safeguards on power plants and also heavy and light duty vehicles. And physicians and other health professionals in our group Healthy with Climate Wisconsin has been advocating on that, and we're waiting to hear what happens with those. So we're hopeful they will get good news on all of those rules in the next few months as well.
Very good. And of course, to learn more, you can look up Healthy Climate Wisconsin, learn more about the issues that are being studied there. Dr. Joel Charles, thank you so much again for telling us all about some long overdue good news when it comes to climate and the environment.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
You know, looking back at all of our climate check reports over the years, it's just hard to imagine that we could cover so many different topics, from wind to solar to EVs to the jobs that are created to the local problems with air quality in some parts around Wisconsin. So we're hoping to give you a nice sample of that as we continue some of these highlights from our climate check on Up North News Radio. We'll be right back.
voice for real news and great conversation in Milwaukee. 540 WAUK.
When severe weather hits and the power goes out, do you have a plan? For reliable power and peace of mind, propane can do that. It only takes about 10 seconds for a propane-powered generator to restore power to your home. So no matter what Mother Nature has in store, you know you're prepared. Learn more at WIPGA.org. This message is sponsored by your local propane provider and the Wisconsin Propane Education and Research Council.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. A new study by Pew Research finds Americans broadly support such democracy reforms as making Election Day a holiday and 2 weeks of in-person early voting, but also think voters must use government-issued ID and voting machines should have paper backup. Pew surveyed over 5,100 American adults in January 2024 from a pool which reflects the demographics of the U.S. It found an increasing number of Americans, 72%, supported making Election Day a national holiday, and 76% supported 2 weeks of in-person early voting. The public is split, however, on having a choice for mail-in voting, with 57% supporting and 41% opposing. Among Republicans, support for mail-in voting dropped in 4 years from 49% to 28%, likely in response to former President Donald Trump's baseless fraud claims. While voting rights groups have tried to protect voting for the elderly, disabled, and students, 81% of Americans support voting only with a government-issued ID, up among all partisan stripes. Support for Election Day registration and automatic voter registration through the DMV declined slightly since 2021, but is down 10% among Republicans. Pew also found notable differences among younger adults and communities of color who are more likely to support early voting, mail-in voting, and automatic in Election Day registration. We have a link to the full Pew survey at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Real news, great conversation from Milwaukee and beyond. 540 WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
As we wrap up this hour with some of our best conversations on climate change and a new clean energy economy, it won't surprise you to hear that the 2024 elections played a central role in all of our segments. But if you missed an episode last February, you might be surprised to learn that a growing group of Republicans in Congress had been forming something called the Conservative Climate Caucus, because not every conservative politician is a denialist, and they wanted to be good stewards to our environment and our grandchildren. But you would not be surprised to learn that the group's momentum ground to a halt once it was clear that Donald Trump wasn't only not going to be shunned by the Republican Party, he was going to be given a pretty clear path to the nomination. Trump has been a shameless throwback to a time when pollution rules were more about making sure to dump your industrial waste downriver rather than upriver. He has promised oil companies the moon and stars. He has waffled on EVs, electric vehicles, based on whether Elon Musk was in the room. And we've documented all the harm that Project 2025 could do if implemented in a Trump presidency. But we also brought attention to what Democrats have been proposing and encouraging and getting done. One of our Climate Check interviews this past year was with Assembly Democratic leader Greta Neubauer.
I started working on the issue of climate change when I was in high school, and particularly in college. That was a while ago, over 10 years, and things were really different. We were seeing very little action from politicians, state, local, federal, on the issue of climate, and that has really changed. Of course, particularly with President Joe Biden's leadership, passing the most important, the most significant climate legislation in our country's history, and that is already making a significant difference in Wisconsin, with over 1,000 new jobs, clean energy jobs in Wisconsin, and $920 million of new clean energy investments just here in Wisconsin, thanks to the Inflation Reduction Act.
So that came through the Inflation Reduction Act, but then at the state level, you and your Democratic colleagues, as I mentioned, put together your own legislative package. And I know we've talked about it, but it's been several months since then. I know that they're built on recommendations from the governor's task force on climate change, but what all is a part of that package? And then just as importantly, with a Republican majority in the legislature. Was there any progress made on any of these fronts this year? So let's start with describing what all is in the package.
Sure. So as you noted, Pat, this package was born largely out of the governor's task force on climate change, led by former Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, that I served on a couple of years ago. There were people across the state, various industries, backgrounds, who contributed to that task force. And we recognized that there was a lot that needed to be done at the state level for us to reduce our carbon footprint, to reduce our longstanding inequities, and to create good jobs, all of which are possible when we tackle climate change. This package is wide-ranging. It covers everything from investments in our schools to make them greener and healthier places for our young people, to supporting our farmers to adopt best practices, a green jobs corps, getting young people involved in the burgeoning clean energy industry. It is broad-ranging, as I said, and it recognizes that there are real opportunities for us to improve our lives here in Wisconsin by tackling climate change. It's not about scarcity. It's about opportunities. And I think that's what we're seeing from the actions of President Biden, and that is how we understand our work here in the state. Unfortunately, Republicans have not moved these bills forward. But as you both know, things are changing in the state legislature. We've got new fair legislative maps that I think are going to prevent Republicans from acting like climate change does not exist here in Wisconsin.
Greta Neubauer, let's close on a good note, one that we struck time and time again this year. Even if you're a climate skeptic or don't think it's that big a deal, you cannot deny that most people want our energy sources to be cleaner. That means new technology, new manufacturing, new jobs. We talked to union journeyman electrician Mark Bohm about the generation of jobs that are out there, so long as politicians don't undo all the progress that's been made.
Yeah, everything's dealing with automation. Mainly, a lot of stuff is for machines to do with some of the harder tasks for us, so we don't have to do so. We don't have to do them, and you know, wear and tear on our bodies. Electricians are in great need. When I was a youngster, I remember my dad always telling me to get a job that a machine can't replace you, as far as like factory work and stuff like that, where they can just put a new machine in and take from having five guys operate that same procedure to one. When you're an electrician, you're the one putting in the machine. There's a problem with the machine, you're the one there troubleshooting it, helping the factory reps to fix it. You know, they can't have a machine replace what you do.
If a lot of the investments in the Inflation Reduction Act were to be pulled back, what would that look like for the trades in Wisconsin overall?
Well, I think it would definitely be a detriment. It'd be programs that were in development would be stymied if there wasn't that, the grants and the funds available from the government. And years ago, when I worked at a startup biofuel company, that was in 2008 during Obama's term, there was lots of clean energy credits out there. This place was taking paper mill sludge, plastic, newspaper, grinding it up, making a pellet out of it, and selling it to the coal burners. Well, when the regime changed and the Republican Congress came in, first thing they like to do is they like to get rid of anything that's clean energy. Well, that place went from a booming industry that was going to add on and employ more people to, we're going 40 hours a week and we got to try to find buyers for our material. Because the joke always was that these coal places would buy the product, and who knows what they actually did with it, humorously, because they got the credit once they received it. So with the clean energy credit at that time, that was promoting a lot of jobs.
And that will wrap up this hour of Up North News Radio, a look back at our climate check segments throughout the year as we try to be better stewards of our planet. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Thanks for listening. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Your new choice. Real news. Great conversation. 540 WAUK.
We'll be right back.
Celebrate New Year's Eve in the heart of downtown at the Madison Concourse Hotel and Governor's Club. Usher in 2025 by chilling to live jazz, feasting on a surf and turf dinner, laughing your way through live comedy, and party hopping between disco with VO5, classic country with Frank Martin Bush and the Names, and a DJ dance party. When the night is over, your guest room is a safe, warm elevator ride away, and you can start your year off right with our outstanding New Year's ballroom brunch. Find your perfect package at concoursehotel.com.
This is 540 WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
This is the CBS News World News Roundup, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Michael Wallace. Police now believe it was a family argument that ended with three people shot and one stabbed in a terminal at Phoenix Sky Harbor Airport last night. Phoenix Police Sergeant Myra Reeson.
We have one adult female who is listed in critical condition. It is life-threatening still at this point. Two adult males are listed in stable condition, and the adult male that had at least one stab wound is in stable condition.
The Wall Street Journal reports the Azerbaijan Airlines jet that crashed in Kazakhstan yesterday, killing 38 people, was likely hit by Russian anti-aircraft fire, which had been battling Ukrainian drones in that area. Reports out of Russia suggested the plane had suffered a bird strike. CBS's Cammie McCormick reports the Kremlin is stepping up security after an assassination by Ukraine last week.
Russia's top security agency says it's arrested several suspects involved in an alleged Ukrainian plot to assassinate senior military leaders.